The Guardian.
The Guardian Books Podcast with Claire Armistead.
The Man Booker Prize Shortlist, 2011.
Yes. Rich has just come in. So put your headphones on.
Okay. Yes. I can hear myself in one ear.
The Sense of an Ending by Julian Barnes.
Snowdrops by A.D. Miller.
The Sisters Brothers by Patrick DeWitt.
Now I need to get a bit more level from you both.
Half Blood Blues by Essie Edugyan.
Pigeon English by Stephen Kelman.
Jamrach's Menagerie by Carol Birch.
Is that right?
Now here's Claire Armistead with Sarah Crown.
The headline news, I suppose, is the absence of Alan Hollinghurst and Sebastian Barry, who were both definitely considered shoo-ins for the shortlist, certainly if you asked a bookie. And Hollinghurst was really the runaway favourite to take the prize, so the fact that he's not on the shortlist kind of frees things up a bit. Actually, I didn't love his novel myself. I didn't think it was patch on the line of beauty, and I thought that the interesting things about it, the stuff about truth and memory and the truth of what we remember, has been done better before, in fact, by another Booker winner, A.S. Byatt's Possession. But I did really like On Canaan's Side, so I was quite sorry not to see that there.
That's the Sebastian Barry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go on, tell me about that.
Well, again, I suppose it's sort of similar to Stranger's Child, Alan Hollinghurst's novel, in some ways, because it's a big kind of century-spanning familial epic. But I just felt more comfortable with it, I think, than I did with the Hollinghurst
book. What's going on here? It's like they've turned their back on two of the obvious blue chips. They've got Julian Barnes, but chip is the word in that case, isn't it? Because it's an absolute titch of a novel.
It's very, very slight indeed. And it's really good. I thought it was really good, extremely affecting, very beautifully written, as you'd expect from Julian Barnes. Elegant, about the sort of the meagerness of middle-class life, I suppose, and the idea that as you're approaching the end of your life, you assess what you've done with it. And his hero has had a good life in many ways. You know, he's had a, if not a successful marriage, then certainly an amicable divorce. His daughter's doing well. He's fine in his life, really, but he is adding it up and feeling that there's a lack, you know. And it's, I mean, it's an old theme, but it's very beautifully done.
I did a bit of a nerdy job on it. I went back and counted the pages. And Amsterdam, which won the Booker, had 192 pages. On Chesil Beach, which was shortlisted but didn't win, had 166 pages. And this is 160. So it would possibly be the tiniest little Booker winner ever in terms of actual stature. But there's something else going on, isn't there, that suddenly struck me, that in a way these three novelists they're reflecting on age, aren't they?
I mean,
it's sort of like they and their novels are the meditations of older people. I wonder whether that's something the judges have turned their back on.
If they were turning their back on anything, it was on that classic 20th century big book, you know, the big spanning epic. And that is what On Canaan's Side and The Stranger's Child have in common, I think, more than anything else. And they've clearly shied away from that. There would have been an argument, I think, that they were moving away from historical novels, except for the fact that many of the other books on the list are historical novels.
Yes.
I think there has certainly been a move away from those classic Booker-type books.
So we've done Julian Barnes. Let's talk about some of the surprises that have made it onto the shortlist.
Yes, instead of talking about what isn't on it, we should talk about what is on it. And probably the two most surprising novels, I think, that are on it are these two debuts, Pigeon English by Stephen Kelman and Snowdrops by A.D. Miller. We know a lot about Pigeon English here because we longlisted it for the Guardian First Book Award, and it's a really great book about an 11-year-old boy on a London housing estate, a Ghanaian boy who sort of witnesses the aftermath of a murder and decides to become a detective and try and find out what's been going on. And it's sort of very vivid, very compelling, current.
It is wonderful. My problem with it is the pigeon. I mean, a part of it's narrated by a pigeon. It is an actual pigeon that's very fey and narrates the beginning of various chapters.
Yeah, I've got to say that didn't work for me either.
However, it is a lovely child's voice, and also it's very topical now, sadly, because it's about knife crime in Peckham. It's about Damilola Taylor, I suppose you would say, but actually it's come back into focus because of all the urban problems there have been recently.
Yeah. And it has. I was thinking about it today, thinking that the slight feyness, the slight whimsy that you're talking about, it shares with Life of Pi, which of course won the Booker back in 2002, I think, or something like that.
But it's not a metaphysical meditation in the way that Life of Pi was, is it?
No, it's not, but it has that sort of the deceptive voice, I suppose.
Okay, so what about The Other Debbie? This is a thriller, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, I suppose actually that's an interesting thing about the list, because Pigeon English is to an extent a thriller as well, or it's sort of based in crime fiction, it has its roots in crime fiction. The title Snowdrops comes from the slang that's used in Moscow for corpses that are left under the snow in the winter and then they emerge as the snow melts in the summer, like snowdrops, kind of grimly. And it's a sort of murder mystery, basically.
And that this is one of the hangovers from what we've all been rather meanly or snidely saying was the Stella Rimington long list, isn't it? I mean, everybody's been looking out for crime and thrillers, but probably completely unfairly.
Yes, but lo and behold, here are two on the list.
There are two on the list. Yep. However, there is one on the list that's anything but a thriller or a crime novel, and that's Carol Birch's Jamrach's Menagerie, which I am really delighted is on. It's a shipwreck novel, and it's set in the 19th century. Carol lives in Lancaster, but we got her down here before she got onto any prize list this year. She's been on several, because she was on The Orange as well, to read us this extract.
Our blood was up. We were in the wild, and the wild has teeth and claws and eyes and a stink like the rotting of a day-old carcass. I saw only a dark living bulk of great size, four bandy legs running. So fast. Dan and the Malays talked with their hands and shoulders and eyes. The smaller of the two Malays spotted blood. Something is leaving a trail. He moved his forearm in such a way, how he did it I don't know. He made it look like a deer. Palm towards us, keeping us back, he went forward. For a while he stood absolutely motionless, looking through the thinning bush, then beckoned us cautiously on. We came like ghosts. I saw the deer first through the high grass. She was far away on the side of a long, balding slope, near dead, her blood trail following her faithfully, not quite to the shadow of the rock to which she'd dragged herself. She'd collapsed in the dust. A stain of blood widened about her, and she was trying, hopelessly but doggedly, to raise her head up sideways. Then I saw the dragon, just above and beyond us, completely still on a low wrinkle of land overlooking the plain, no more than a deck's length from me. A huge brownish-grey thing with black head and legs, bigger than a tiger, longer and lower, but raising its powerful chest and head as high at the front, and trailing behind it a mighty weapon of a tail.
That was Carol Birch reading from her shortlisted Jamrach's Menagerie, which I might just nip down to the bookies and put some money on. Although I have to say, I argued it off our predictions of the long list on the basis that I might hex her, because I feel I've jinxed her by rooting for her so strongly in the past. Anyway, so now let's move on to the two Canadians.
Yes, two Canadians on the shortlist, which is very exciting if you're Canadian, and maybe if you're British as well. The first of these, and the one that I'm really excited about, and I have to say before I start talking about it that I haven't read it, but I plan to because it sounds right up my street, is a book called The Sisters Brothers by Patrick DeWitt. And it's a sort of, as far as I can gather from the review, it's a Wild West book. It's an American story, although it's written by a Canadian. And it tells the story of Eli Sisters, who's a hired killer on the American West Coast in 1851, around the time of the Gold Rush. And it's a sort of his adventures, I suppose.
What's so clever about this is its topicality comes from the fact that it's another period of very extreme, quick change, and it's technological change and economic change. People are making fortunes.
Yeah, which suits us very well indeed.
And ways of getting money, getting gold out of the ground are completely changing. So it's sort of weird historical relevance.
Yeah, it's crying out to be read metaphorically, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, absolutely. How about Half Blood Blues? This is Ezi Edugian. Very different period of history.
Yes, but again, historical. It's Nazi Germany, and it's about the black experience in Nazi Germany. And the hero of the novel is this jazz trumpeter, I think.
Yeah, he's the sort of the nominal hero, but he's gone missing for most of the novel. We don't know whether we assume he's dead in the Holocaust. And it's structured around a tribute to him in 1992 in Berlin, which two of his old bandmates go back to, and it starts a sort of investigation into what happened before and during and after the Second World War.
And this is interesting to me because, again, with the caveat that this is another of the books on the shortlist that I haven't read, but just from your description of it there, it sounds to me more like a Costa novel than a Booker novel. And it feels, looking at this shortlist and going through the books on it, that it has a much more populist, traditionally Costa bent than we're used to with the Booker shortlist.
So everybody's trying to muscle in on the middle ground, is that what you're saying?
what we've seen up to this point generally is that the Costa will occupy the middle ground and bring us a sort of a middle ground winner, and the Booker is more at the literary end of the spectrum. And again, obviously, you know, there's nothing better about either of them particularly, but what's been good up to this point is that there's been a prize representing each area, and it slightly feels here as if the two things have kind of smooshed together.
I'd certainly say that Carol Birch's Jamrach is, it's like a sort of old-fashioned shipwreck novel, and I think it's absolutely glorious, but I would have more expected it to win the Orange, which is why I thought I might have hexed it by backing it.
So what do you think will win then?
Oh, that's a big question. So go on, Sarah, your turn. Who are you going to back?
I can't believe you're making me answer when you didn't answer. I think that, again, I feel slightly stymied here because unusually I haven't read all the books on the list, but I'm going to go for Julian Barnes because I think that it's beautiful and moving. I also think that, you know, he's a Booker bridesmaid and he deserves it.
I really wish Arthur and George had won. Of course, that was the book that should
Arthur
have won.
George.
But there is a tradition in these prizes of people winning for not necessarily their best book as well, isn't
Absolutely.
There?
Absolutely.
I mean, not that this isn't his best book, but it's just a short book. It's not the one that one would necessarily
expect. It doesn't have the heft, I don't
by.
Think. It doesn't have the sort of impressiveness and the stature of Arthur and George, which I just thought was absolutely brilliant. But it's small and beautiful, so I hope it
likes. Small and beautiful is good. We're going to just finish by going back to one of the authors we mentioned earlier, who's Stephen Kelman, who we managed to collar during the Edinburgh International Book Festival a couple of weeks ago.
I submitted Pidgin English just to the slush pile of various agencies. A few of them rejected it, and then fourth time around, I think, It ended up on the desk of my lovely agent, Joe Unwin, who saw the potential in it, and the rest is history. And I think there were 12 publishers involved in the bidding at one point. And for me, being someone who's dreamed of being a writer since a very early age, to have that kind of attention was obviously very flattering, very exciting. It was all a bit of a whirlwind. In the end, Bloomsbury won out, and I'm very happy to be with them. They're treating me very well.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.